House Committee on Revenue for March 30th, 2017 will come to order. Colleagues, we're going to take, as I indicated yesterday, we're going to take the public hearings first for today and look at the work sessions after that. So we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2270 and House Bill 2466. Do you want to explain those to us? And
sure.
We'll get underway. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2270 has to do with extending the privilege taxes on forest products harvested on forest lands. And this would extend it through calendar years 2018 and 2019. It prepares to set the harvest taxes to be allocated to the Forest Research and Experiment Account, Oregon Forest Practices Act Administration, that would be the Department of Forestry, and also professional forestry education at Oregon State University. And so the measure has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and that's the reason for the blanks in the bill there, and also the amount would be set more when there's more information available about the budget and the budgetary needs. House Bill 2466, there is a -1 amendment in OLIS, and so this imposes a tax on the harvest of timber from forest lands in Oregon. The -1 amendment moves the additional tax from $10 per thousand board feet to $5 per thousand board feet, and also provides an addition allocation of funds for reimbursement to the Department of Revenue, not to exceed 2% of the proceeds. And so it also cuts the amounts in half for the allocation to various entities. Those entities include the Watershed Conservation Grant Fund and also the Forest Fire Reserve Fund. And so it kind of makes a modification there. But the current taxes on timber harvest are 3.7287 per thousand board feet. The projected harvest in 2018 is 3.96 million thousand board feet. I guess that would be billion. And the impact of House Bill 2466 with the -1 amendment would be $19.7 million a year.
Okay. Just by way of introduction, the first bill, if I have it right, is the bill that the committee routinely considers for the funding of various forestry activities, including Oregon State University's College of Forestry. The second one, I think, is proposed by Representative Holby. And I see he's here. Why don't you start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, I appreciate having a hearing on this. And for the record, Paul Holby, State Representative, District 8, which is South Eugene and South Central Lane County. And I know that this bill is, seen as contentious, and I have worked on this issue for a couple of sessions. And just really the aim of, I'll speak to House Bill 2466 first, is really to address the risk that we face in fighting forest fires in this state, and also some of the struggles that our counties have from diminished revenues from monies that they used to receive or from the Payments to Counties Act from the federal government for based on harvest. So those are the two primary purposes of House Bill 2466. And the diminishing financial resources and insurance, I think, is also something that we need to think about, because right now we do pick up insurance for about $50 million, I believe, to cover some catastrophic fire costs. And I worry with climate change that we will have, and it's projected we'll have, continuing severe fires in our future. And what happens when that happens is we have to go to the general fund to pick a lot of that money up. And it essentially is, the consequences of taking money out of the general fund challenges our funding for schools and other critical services. And I think it's time that the state start thinking about, you know, building a reserve to deal with catastrophic fire so it doesn't have these huge ramifications to our general fund, and also that we, you know, try to mitigate that risk to our general fund and have the resources available to fight fires. I fear someday in the future we will be left with a situation where we will be going, we don't have enough money to fight fires anymore. And luckily FEMA, when we get into structures that catch on fire, bails us out once in a while, but I don't think we can rely on that solely either. So just clearly, I have talked to many people over the years about forestry issues and about this particular concept, and you know, and the Dash One amendment does cut my proposal down in half, and you know, $2.50 would be going into a forest fire reserve fund for those purposes to battle fires. And I believe 50 cents would be going to some watershed enhancement projects to mitigate some of the damages there. And the remainder of the money pays for the cost to the Department of Forestry, Department of Revenue, and then goes to our counties based on their harvest, because they don't receive you know, a tremendous amount of value from you know, those severance taxes or the harvest of timber. So that kind of lines out sort of the purpose of the bill. And I'm just looking at this, you know, I think we really need to look closely on how we determine the formula for who pays for fighting forest fires. And when I compare this, I looked at a lot of different information and trying to understand the assumptions of how they determine who pays how much. It looks to me that the forest industry has the most interest in, and derives a great deal of benefit from logs, whether they're public or private. And you know, the forest lands that are protected by Department of Forestry, those ODF protected lands, 77% of them are private. And so when I look at this, and I just really question that we've really done a thorough job of looking at the formulas and looking at the fairness of what, who pays how much. And so I'm proposing the 2466 for the purposes of trying to build that reserve fund and also trying to mitigate the risk to the general fund from catastrophic fire. I did some comparisons, and when I look at the statistics I was able to get with the help of staff, were in the state of Washington, they have a similar severance tax. I think it's excise tax based on 1,000 board feet that's harvested. They pay $11.74. Mm. The state of Oregon right now, I think it's around $3.50. Maybe you stated what it was currently. And I know there's some differences in income tax and sales tax in Oregon and Washington, but I'm not sure those are relevant comparisons, really. Everybody pays federal income taxes. And so I just look at that, and I figure, you know, why Washington doesn't seem to be harmed by having a higher severance tax. And the benefit of those logs largely goes to the industry. You know, they create jobs, which I recognize those are important, but a lot of our industries create jobs, and they're all important. But the idea of this industry does enjoy a pretty good subsidy for a lot of good reasons, probably. But I think there's just, you know, we really need to reevaluate this, in my opinion. When looking at the total acreage of private forest land versus, you know, the sum of all private and public forest lands, and try to say, oh, you know, the private forests only make up 38% or so of the forest lands, and so we should only pay 38% of the cost, doesn't really take into account that the U.S. Forest Service pays for fighting their own forest fires on their own lands, You know, in 2014, they spent $218 million. And so if you're going to look at the total forest lands as a percentage of the private and the total forest, you really should be subtracting out those Forest Service lands, in my opinion, as well, when you're starting to make assumptions about, you know, how this formula should work. The other thing that I think needs to be looked at, I searched and searched and searched to try to understand how the administrative costs for Department of Forestry is shared. And it looks like to me that the state picks up the administrative costs and that the industry gets credit for that's attributable to private land on in-kind contributions of their private assets that they have available, private assets that are probably, you know, could be depreciated as well. And I can't find any accounting anywhere of those in-kind contributions that they get credit for to, I assume, claim that they shouldn't be paying any of the administrative costs for fighting forest fires. So, you know, I think those are important points that this committee should ask staff to delve into when doing this. I look at this. At one point, as you may recall, I wanted to use part of this money to provide a tax credit for logs that were milled in Oregon. And, you know, that was challenged. They said, oh, that could be unconstitutional. And certainly I agree. If it was challenged, it might be determined unconstitutional, but I'd submit almost all of our tax, our film and video. It could be challenged in much the same way. So we pick and choose which tax credits we want to, you know, bring up constitutionality on. And so that's a little frustrating because I thought that was a good concept, one that many mill owners have complained about, not having a supply of logs. And yet a lot of our private logs, you know, not the majority, but a lot are shipped overseas. So, you know, we're losing a little added value there. You know, and I don't want to beat up on the industry so much. I don't, you know, they do a great job. They provide jobs, and, you know, it's a big part. I'm really excited about cross-laminated timber. But when I'm looking at forest fires, I just really think we need to start building our own reserve fund, to sort of a self-insurance fund to fight catastrophic fire. It puts our general fund at huge risk going forward, and I think that this would just be a smart move. I realize this is a majority vote requires 36 votes, not, you know, likely, but I really hope that someday we start having this conversation about how more equitably to do this. You know, speaking to the other bill, I believe it's 2470. You know, I also think that you should look at how that's traditionally been divvied up with Oregon Forest Resources Institute, and you know, I certainly support the Oregon State and their Department of Forestry, but when everybody else is making cuts and the priority for this severance tax should be fighting forest fires, I sometimes question why we have a semi-quasi public entity, OFRI, putting ads on TV telling us about how great the Forest Practices Act are. Which there's many people who don't believe they're quite, you know, that great compared to some of our neighbors. And so, you know, adding $5 to the $3.50 would bring us to $8.50 in the severance tax in 2466-1, which is still substantially cheaper than what the state of Washington charges. And so I think there's room there for us to, you know, really have a better capacity to fight forest fires and protect our general fund, and that's you know, pretty much what 2466-1 is intended to do. I realize the original bill at $10 may have put me over the state of Washington, and talking to others, they just thought that was too expensive, so I did drop it down to something that I thought was more reasonable. I'm sure others will say it's not reasonable. But I think we really need to understand it's one of the most convoluted funding mechanisms that I've ever witnessed, trying to understand how we fund fighting forest fires. With the base fund seems pretty straightforward, but once you get beyond that, It takes somebody with a lot more brains than I do to understand all of it. I'm not sure I've talked to anybody that can fully explain it. So I know there's a lot of explanations people can make, but I come down to just basics on this and look at the share that the state's paying, the share that the federal government's paying, whether the U.S. Forest Service is paying directly or BLM is paying by contract, and then looking, you can't really, if you want to use acreage as the basis, which I think some people do, I'm not exactly sure that's the right measurement, but even if you do that, I feel like our general fund has too much exposure to fighting forest fires. It's something we need to do. I understand that, but we need a better system for doing it. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll leave it at that and try to answer a question.
Representative Nose, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Holley, for bringing us this bill. I think I understood your testimony. The current tax, the current severance tax is $3.50.
You'd ask staff. You know, it changes a little bit from time to time.
Okay. Oh, they're showing. It's okay. It's 372.87. Okay.
And that's based on budget considerations. What normally, this bill doesn't have a subsequent referral on it, but what normally happens is that what's happened in the past is that the Revenue Committee does its magic, whatever that is, and sends it on to the Ways and Means Committee. The Ways and Means Committee works the budget for the various items that are referred to in Section 1 of 2270 and fills in the blanks in order to pay for those for that budget, right, for those budget items. That's the way it's normally been worked, and that's why it is very unusual in the sense that it's the only tax that I know about that's actually handled this way. So we end up with these odd numbers based on what adds up to the budget.
It's like a levy, then, is it, sir?
In effect, I think that's right.
We say, here's the what we want for. It sounded like you, Representative Holley, you said this pays for extension and a couple of other things. I'm sorry, I don't know anything about this. Elementary questions at this point. I can just be quiet and listen.
What it currently pays for is the Oregon Forest Resources Institute pays for research at the Department of Forestry at Oregon State University. It does pay into the Forest Fire Fund, and it also pays for administering the Forest Practices Act. And, you know, when I look at this severance tax and look at the history of it, you know, it's been stated that their priority should be fighting forest fires. And so that's why I question some of those other uses of that severance tax. I think they need to be adjusted for that priority going forward, because our general fund keeps getting hit with this time and time again. And, you know, we need a better system that's more stable for us to fight forest fires, and we need to be planning for the future. And that's why I think we need a larger severance tax, one, to help build a reserve fund to fight catastrophic fires, and I will admit the other piece is just to help our rural counties who are suffering from the lack of federal dollars coming in based on their harvest on the Payment to Counties Act for federal harvest, and so, you know, they don't really receive that same kind of benefit from private lands as they used to from public lands, and so that's the other piece of that.
Chair Barr, just two quick follow-up questions. So would you dedicate this tax basically to firefighting and then county assistance? Is that part of your bill?
Yes, but that is in addition. It's actually in addition to – this bill is in addition to the existing $3.70 tax. So if you added them together, you would have an $8 tax.
And then – maybe this is a question for staff. Do we have a sense of how much revenue this would generate?
I think she does.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Nose. The revenue from the whole $5 amount is approximately $20 million a year.
It's not that much. For fighting fires?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, and our general fund oftentimes suffers a lot more than that.
Say.
For fighting forest fires.
Yeah, can we get the numbers for what we've spent the last few biennia on fighting forest fires?
That would be
a useful. Okay, give us an idea of how of how appropriate these numbers are.
Right.
I mean, I noticed in 2270, for example, there's the amount in that bill, sub 2, lines 13 through 17, is not proposed to be changed, and that's 62.5 cents for fire suppression. The other numbers, sub 1, sub 3, and sub 4, all have blanks inserted, which I assume means that they're intending that that would be changed based on the budget. So we should be able to calculate pretty much what that 62.5 cents would produce. And my question then, Representative Holvey, is that if your bill was adopted with the amendment you've proposed, wouldn't that would produce, if I understand it, $2.50 a year plus the 62.5 cents that's already in subsection 2. Is that right? For fire suppression.
That would be correct, and I think if the math is correct, if your staff says that this would generate around $20 million, $10 million would, in under 2466-1, would go to fighting forest fires on an annual basis, and that would be in addition to whatever you put forward in 2470. Now, if you don't pass 2466-1, I would suggest that the 62 cents in the bill, I didn't really look at it that closely, in 2470, that may be changed to increase the amount that actually goes to fighting forest fires, because that should be the priority of this tax going forward. I mean, none of us want to see our forests burn up, and you know, it's becoming more and more challenging, and I really worry about federal dollars coming in to help us out in the future as well. I worry about Lloyd's of London looking at climate change and going, you know, we're going to cancel this insurance policy going forward as well, because there's another $50 million. And so, you know, I just think it would be smart of the state of Oregon to start looking towards a self-insurance plan, and that's sort of, you know, what's underlying House Bill 2466-1. You know, I just
self-insurance means you raise enough money to cover the cost.
That's correct.
Okay, I think I got it now. Thank you,
Representative Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Holvey. You know, is there a way to determine? I mean, we have obviously multiple types of properties, lands in the state. You know, you've got private land, you got forest land, you've got BLM land. But in terms of how the distinction or how the resources are apportioned as those fires that can sometimes involve all three in one conflagration are deployed, is there an accurate way to determine and make the claim, I guess, that, you know, we should be only fighting fires on, you know, that are Oregon's responsibility, the feds take care of their own thing, and BLM, you know, it seems to me a very complicated question. The other question I would have, too, is regarding BLM lands. I mean, that's a separate type of property, and what sort of resources do they kick in for their own fire mitigation and or eradication? Do we know that? All covered under the federal?
Chair Barnard, Representative Johnson. I mean, that's a good question. The BLM doesn't cover their firefighting costs in the same way that the Forest Service does.
Right.
So I didn't, you know, when I look at this, I don't subtract out that public land, because I think some of their lands are contracted out to the ODF. You know, so how that pans out at the end, do they cover their whole cost, or is the state picking up part of it? I don't know the answer to that, and you would have to get an analyst from LFO probably to take a crack at answering that question. I was just looking at, you know, the larger picture of how this exists, and you're right, there's different kinds of land, you know, even in the property taxes of forest land that do go to the counties, you know, it's somewhere around $3.50 an acre or something like that on average. And what's interesting to look at that is a very large portion of that, those property taxes in forest lands, are actually from structures that people have houses in. So actually the property tax on the on the forest itself is much, much lower because they get the majority of their property tax on a lot of it anyway, on those structures that happen to be in forest lands. Does the ODF fight those fires to protect structures? Or I know the fire districts in the local areas do a lot of that as well. So, you know, I don't know everything about this. I just flag this for this committee because I think thinking about the revenue and how this is partialed out to the different to our general fund versus what the private industry pays needs to be adjusted, in my mind, to be fair. And you know, it you know, we subsidize a lot of industries, but I don't know anyone that has quite this kind of a formula that helps them out quite as much. And you know, that's just, you know, my opinion, of course, and I'm sure that there's plenty of others behind me who have radically different opinions on this, and I respect their opinion, you know, but it is when I look at this, and I've spent a lot of time dealing with forced issues, not in this particular building, but in another venue, dealing with national forest issues, and I just think that as a state, we need to do something smarter about fighting forest fires.
Okay. Other Representative Marsh, please.
Thank you. And thank you, Rep. Holvey, for bringing this forward. Very interesting concepts. Do you happen to know what Washington spends its money on?
Find out. Chair Barnhart, Representative Marsh, I'm not sure I understand the question in terms of fighting forest fire?
No, the money that they assess.
That $11, I think, right. You're referring to, yeah.
Yeah, from what I gathered, it was extremely similar to what Oregon spends their monies on, except that, but I don't know specifically if they have other uses, like some of it going to schools or some of it going there. I was just looking at the comparison of the severance tax itself, the total severance tax on the logs. And obviously, the state of Washington is the closest comparison we could make to our economy and to the industry. So it, you know, it sort of it stands out that there's a pretty good difference there.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a big chunk of change between $3.70 and $11.70. It's $8. So you know, per 1,000 board feet, that's you know, so that's a substantial amount.
What's 1,000 board feet sell for?
Oh, I'm sure those people behind me could give you the spot price today.
I bet they could.
No, 300 and I don't know. I can tell you what lumber might cost.
Several hundred dollars.
No, several.
No.
Not that much.
No.
Okay.
But, yeah, you ask them that. I buy plywood and lumber mostly, so I don't do a lot of log purchasing.
Right, and, of course, the one hopes not. Thank you. Other questions for Representative Holvey? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony today. With that, I have a panel, so we'll start with them. Christina McNitt, Roger Beyer, and Steve Cafferata. Please, whoever wants to go first.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Christina McNitt with the Oregon Forest and Industries Council. It's a trade association representing Oregon's forest products manufacturers and larger landowners. House Bill 2466, as you've heard, proposes to add a $10 per 1,000 board foot tax to fund fire suppression, watershed conservation, and distribution for counties, and the Dash 1 amendments does something similar at a $5 increase. OFIC opposes House Bill 2466 and the Dash 1 amendments, whether it triples or more than doubles the current harvest tax rate of actually $3.74 per 1,000 board feet. The harvest tax has generally enjoyed landowner support for the five specific programs it currently funds, which does include fire suppression. And I want to talk about fire suppression more particularly in context of this bill, because in addition to the 62.5 cents that you see in this statute through the harvest tax mechanism, landowners pay three other direct taxes towards fire suppression annually. These include a per acre tax at an east side or a west side rate, a minimum lot charge, and or an improved lot charge. Oregon's complete and coordinated fire system is unique, and it's unparalleled in this entire country, and we're proud of it. The funding structure is complicated. We can agree with Representative Holvey on that. But generally, it's captured into three buckets, which I'm going to take a stab at here. There's the base level of fire protection, emergency level of protection, and catastrophic level. So at the base level, landowners in 12 fire protection districts across the state work in partnership with the Oregon Department of Forestry to craft annual budgets that essentially fund the state's largest fire department. The investment is shared 50-50 split and totals more than $45 million of investment annually. I will submit these charts into OLIS promptly after the hearing, but I think following the conversation, they're worthwhile. So if you would refer to the chart on the second page of my handout, it compares the fire protection funding structures of other Western states. Note that landowners in only two other states, Washington and Idaho, shoulder a similar proportion at the base level. A side note, in addition to the base assessment, landowners annually contribute $13.5 million in equipment availability, pond and gate readiness and maintenance, employee training, etc., in actual direct in-kind contributions towards fire. So at the emergency level, that middle column, where fires are beyond the local district's ability to manage alone, landowners pay half of the first $20 million in direct suppression costs. These are all credited towards Oregon's current $50 million insurance deductible. So again, looking at that chart on the second page, no other state enjoys landowner contributions at the emergency level, period. And no other state enjoys an insurance policy at the catastrophic level. Outside of Oregon, emergency and catastrophic costs are paid exclusively with public resources, whether they're county resources or general fund resources. And the theory reflects fire starts, right? Not all fire starts are due to landowners. Sure. In fact, typically a third are caused by the public, a third by lightning, and a third by landowners. Interestingly, in 2016, human-caused fires greatly exceeded lightning, accounting for 84% of fire starts and 93% of the acres burned. So to say that again, 84% of all fire starts were started by the public and were the cause of 93% of the burned acres. This is a significant concern for our landowners, as most were caused by members of the public not following simple fire season restrictions, like mowing and pile burning at the wrong time of the day. Some were also determined to be arson fires. So while fire cost conversations are necessarily in this building revolving around the cost of fire suppression, I'd ask you to remember that for landowners, the true cost equation of wildfire is the cost of suppression plus the lost resources, right? You lose that timber resource and all of the environmental benefits that you've been protecting. A general rule of thumb is that resource loss is a minimum of three times the actual cost of fire suppression. And in some cases, the factor can be as high as 10. Finally, on page three of my handout is the so-called ski slope graph, which shows the actual fire suppression cost paid by landowners since 1992. 62.3% of the actual fire costs have been paid by landowners and 37.7% by the general fund. In other words, landowners have paid more than $83.2 million more than the general fund. In closing, House Bill 2466 contemplates upsetting a carefully crafted partnership with landowners and the state with respect to its renowned fire program. But while OFIC opposes 2466, we're frankly pleased that the committee's willing to take the time to review fire funding in general And we'd invite you to talk to our partner experts in the room, which is the Oregon Department of Forestry. Typically, we have very in-depth conversations about funding in the Ways and Means Committees, and it would be of great benefit, I think, for more members of the legislature to understand the mechanics of fire funding, and I'd invite you to make use of the opportunity today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I submitted testimony via OLIS. You should have that. I won't read it verbatim, but I'll make the points off of that. Oswald is opposed to House Bill 2466, and where we think this bill is poorly crafted and ill-advised, I must say we would agree with one statement that the representative brought the bill made, that this is about equity of fire funding. And where he has a different version of equity, apparently, than we do, because as you just heard from Christina, Oregon landowners are paying more than their fair share for the cost of both large fires and the base fire protection. So we welcome the thought of equity, but that would mean the state picking up their share instead of us picking up some of their share. So the Wildfire Protection Act 2013 exemplified good public policy, wherein the Department of Forestry brought together a very diverse group of stakeholders, including OFIC, Small Woodlands, other groups, and we came to this compromise and conclusion that equity is the best way to fund this. So that bill was passed, and it's still being implemented, and in the next biennium, we hope to get to that full equity figure where the state will actually pick up its share. And the landowners, the ski slope chart you just heard, will start to equal more of a balance between the two over time. Recognize we are already about $80 million in the rears, so the state has that much to make up before we get to equity. Using that framework of success in the past, ODF, this last interim, developed a new work group of which I served on. This work group worked with legislators. There were seven legislators on the work group, myself as a member of OSWA, OFIC, and other stakeholders, and to do an extensive look at the large fire funding costs and who's paying the bill and whether or not there should be changes. There were many concepts considered and debated. We worked over about a 10-month time period with lots of meetings, and no legislative proposals came forward, which was a kind of a disappointment personally, because the one proposal that had the most traction, again, I've got to agree with Representative Holvey, it was the state should build a reserve to fight fire, to pay for firefighting. The difference is that proposal was the state should, we should ask the legislature to put forth a constitutional amendment dedicating some portion of lottery funds to build that reserve. Because you just heard from Christina, the vast majority of fires are caused by the public, and the vast majority of costs are borne by the landowners. So the best way to fund that is to have all Oregonians pay for that, not tax one segment, and that'd be the private landowners. So this bill did not come from that committee, so we cannot support it. That was a collaborative effort that we worked in good faith to try to support. But another part of that study was that they asked the Department of Forestry through the Emergency Fire Costs Committee to look at the BLM contract and how the state contracts with BLM for fighting protection on BLM lands. And Steve Cafferata will talk more about that, as he's a member of the Emergency Fire Costs Committee, but that work is recently done also. And it's very telling that where some changes could be, and I'm not going to take Steve's testimony from him. But just a couple more points that I think you need to understand. Christina mentioned there are three ways that landowners pay for firefighting now, in addition to the 62.5 cents. There's actually a fourth way she didn't mention. There's another acreage assessment, and it pays for the base level. Landowners all across the state pay for the base level of firefighting, and that cost is not the 7.5 or 5 cents you heard from Christina, but it ranges from $1 to $3 per acre that we pay for the base level of firefighting. And another point I'd like to make sure everyone realizes, under the current harvest tax, the first 25,000 board feet that every landowner logs or harvests every year is exempt. So that is considered the small landowner exemption. But I want to point out that every landowner, every timber harvester gets that exemption, not just the small landowner. So the first 25,000 board feet that are harvested, you do not pay the harvest tax on that. It's all, but everyone pays the full rate after, over and above that amount. So with that, on my with my testimony, there is some information about how fires are firefighting is funded in the state of Oregon. I encourage you to look at it. Much of it you already heard from Christina. I won't go over it. I do have one mistake in it, in that the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, which is funded solely by the landowners, and that is the landowners' firefighting reserve, if you would. I have in my testimony that, that the income streams generate about $13 million per year. That's not correct. It only actually is generating right now at about $11.5 million per year, and that's based on the smaller amount of harvest. And with that, I'll stop there. We'll have Steve talk about the BLM review that was recently completed, and we'll be happy to answer any questions after that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Steve Caffaretta from Dexter, Oregon, and I'm a member of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee. I represent small woodland owners on that four-person committee. We administer the Emergency Fire Fund to equalize fire costs between the protection districts across the state when there are emergency fires. My wife and I are small woodland owners, and we're also members of three forest protective associations where we have property. I'm a professional forester, hard to believe, but I've been at it a little over 50 years. And I want you to, we've been talking about it, but I really would like to emphasize Oregon's complete and coordinated fire protection system. You know, it was started by private landowners over 100 years ago, and it's based on landowners and both public and private coming together under the currently under the great leadership of the Oregon Department of Forestry, with the goal of having the 50-50 funding that Roger just talked about. And the study, which was the BLM Western Oregon Protection Study, which came out of the funding work group that, that Roger mentioned, covered the 10-year period from 2006 to 2015. Interestingly enough, the emergency, the during that first 7 years, the general fund didn't pay any suppression costs for large fires because it didn't reach that deductible limit. And it was, but it was during this very difficult period of 2013, 14, and 15, and I'm sure you're all familiar with how terrible that was. And in fact, I don't ever remember a time, I've only been watching it for 40 years or so here, but that we ever had three bad seasons in a row. We've had several times we've had two bad seasons, but that was three. And so that sorely tested the system. And in fact, that's why that study that Roger referenced was done. And out of that study, then one of the recommendations that came out of a funding group, which was a subgroup of that large group, was to look at the BLM contract lands and the amount of money that they were paying versus the amount of the private lands in through the Emergency Fire Fund. And as you know, that once the Emergency Fire Fund is all expended, that's when the general fund comes into play. And it's also what gives access of the BLM into the general fund, because if they were eligible for the emergency funds of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, then once those are exhausted, they also go after those the general funds in order to get the fire paid, the bills paid. So if you can look at the third page, I think you've got it on your computer there. I hope you do. The third page of my testimony looks like this with some graphs. Do you have that there, I hope? Yep.
And for the audience, it's up here.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, it gives you, it's, if I just tell you the numbers, it's hard to see it. And if you can see on the left, upper left-hand side, the money in that this study showed during that 10-year period, the BLM put in $2.1 million into the Emergency Fire Fund, because primarily have very reduced harvest level now, and they're only really paying mostly on a per acre basis. And the landowners, private landowners, put in $79 million, or about 97% of the money was separate from that contract. And if you look on the right-hand side, and I should say that this is the abstract of that study, so if you wanted to get that study, Doug Graff, I'm sure, would send you a copy, and this is just the abstract. So if you look on the right-hand side, the money out, you can see that 59% of the money went to fight BLM fires, and 41% went for the fires that weren't on BLM land. And then if you look at the bottom there, it just gives you a rough idea that within that contract area, 22% of the acres are BLM, 78% are non-BLM acres, and yet on the fire side of it, 56% of the fire acres burned were on BLM land, so it was a kind of a disproportionate amount. So that kind of gives you an overview of what came out of that really very detailed analysis using all of the financial records. Besides the study, then there's an appendix that lists the numbers out in almost a dizzying array, but I personally find them pretty interesting, but probably more so than I think the abstract gives you the bottom line of what came out of that study. Well, one thing that's critical to understand is that most of this is in the checkerboard area, and the contract area of the Department of Forestry is it runs along the west slope of the Cascades, so it's all the west side lands from the Washington border down to the California border, plus a little piece of land that goes over to Highway 97 down by Klamath Falls in Klamath County, which has also got that checkerboard and BLM lands intermixed there. So that's the study area and where all of this took place.
Mm-hmm.
We feel that it's super important to have just one agency, and the Department of Forestry has done just a great job over the years that handles the fire protection across all of these lands, because the property lines are all intermixed, and to have a variety of agencies all trying to deal with it does not make very good sense, and also doesn't make very good firefighting. And so that's why we have that contract. And the point I'm trying to make is that, yeah, there is a need for equity and funding, but increasing the private funding through additional taxes really isn't what would help equity. That would make it worse. And so we at least, the Emergency Fire Fund, we look to the Department of Forestry to work with the BLM to achieve this funding equity, to find some kind of a better system, because it's clearly not working very well the way it is right now, the way this study showed, and which we largely suspected, although we didn't have all the numbers to prove it. That kind of gives you the overview of it, and I thank you for the opportunity, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. To get into all the complexities of the fire funding, I suggest you get Doug Graff to tell you about it. He's the last, the most expert on the fire funding from the Oregon Department of Forestry. He's chief of fire, but I would also be happy to try to do that. I've studied him for a long time.
Thank you. Representative Nose. Representative Nose, and then I have two others. Please, go ahead. Okay.
My first question is, Mr. Chair, this might be a question for staff or maybe for Christina or Roger. Are there other timber harvest taxes that we pay in the state besides the ones that are being discussed in these bills today? Or is this the soul of it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Nose, this is the only harvest tax we pay. Of course, forest landowners pay property tax. And then we also have an income tax like all other businesses in the state of Oregon and individuals.
Next question. Two more questions.
Please. Yeah.
Do other states not charge any kind of harvest tax at all? So on the chart that's here, and it kind of breaks down how fire protection is paid for, do none of these other states pay any kind of harvest tax? Maybe they're not using it for fire protection is kind of what I'm asking. I'm trying to get a sense of the overall tax burden. So do they not pay any harvest tax, or do they maybe pay somebody, it goes to other things.
Pull the pieces together.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Nose, this comparison is around fire funding. And so it's not a comparison of all the different tax schematics for all of the states. So, for example, in the first column at the base level where you see that Washington landowners pay a portion of the base rate,
right.
And Idaho does too, I can't tell you what those tax streams are that collect that 50% for the landowners. I believe some of it is a harvest tax, and that may also go into their forest practices, as it does when we talk about the next bill. But that's a different comparison than what I've provided to you.
Mr. Chair, on that note, I have in front of me, that, and I don't know if this is all the states or not, but I have a listing of the states that have timber or harvest timber, and it looks like there are approximately 12 states that pay some sort of a harvest tax.
Okay. I'm just curious because I think, you know, maybe they're paying for fire suppression differently than we are.
Yeah.
But they have other taxes that they're paying on timber severance, and it's going for different things. It'd be interesting to see how that washes out for the whole thing.
And I think we can ask staff to bring us up to speed on this. Well, I mean, the bills are here partly for us to consider the revenue stream.
Well, so then
Ways and Means is going to consider how to spend the money, but it's our job to figure out where it comes from.
So my larger question is, I understand you don't like these particular funding mechanisms, okay? But are we spending enough money overall to address the possibility of large fires? I'm not sure. I'm not a forestry person. I've not been in that space, so I don't know. But I am nervous about it.
Chair Barnhart and Representative Nose, I would really implore you to, maybe even if you have the time, and I know that's an indulgence, but if you could have the Department of Forestry come and present thoroughly on fire funding. There have been sessions after sessions after sessions to build this program over time. And, we feel pretty good about it right now, but obviously we're still paying the majority of the actual costs, unlike any other state. And so we would like to get more to parity. To Mr. Caffaretta's comments, there are conversations. We can always make the program better, and we need to look at where those outlays and inputs are coming from. We don't believe it's necessarily from the landowners, but I'm not sure that the landowners are the people you want to hear that from, probably the agency that administers and runs the program.
And Mr. Chair, my response to that would be, I think Oregon has the best system of fighting forest fire, wildfire in the nation. You heard about the complete and coordinated system. We are one of the only states where the landowners play a key role in that. There are 12 protection association districts. Steve sits on three of them. I sit on the board of a different one that he is not. We build the budgets at the base level with the Department of Forestry as a partnership, because we are paying for half the cost. But every one of those budgets in those districts has to go before the Board of Forestry annually in their June meeting to be approved that they are adequate, they will provide adequate level of protection for the resource. And so we as landowners feel great comfort in that there's lots of eyes and lots of experts look at those every year. So I feel pretty good that we have a system that provides an adequate level of protection for our forest resources.
The definition of property tax. Okay. Representative Bueller, please.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Could you just go through and explain in detail this first line? I'm interested in the financing model of fighting fires and where insurance kicks in, where the deductible is. I can't really explain.
You'd like a bit more detail, I think.
Yeah, just define what basic level is and where's. I just can't understand this.
Yeah. So, Chair Barnhart and Representative Bueller, I can give you the thumbnail sketch, but the Department of Forestry really is the expert on that. But the base level of funding is what we talked about.
Let me interrupt. Kyle Abram is here,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps he can answer this question later.
There's Kyle from Private Forest. You also have Fire, ODF Fire, on my other side in the room as well, I think, available to answer questions.
They're not signed up, apparently.
They're here, though.
Perhaps we'll hear from them anyway. Okay, well, can we do that in a little bit? I agree with you. I'd like to know that, too. That'd be great. Representative Marsh?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to pose a question and invite an answer offline because I know it's not totally germane to what we're talking about today. But when you talk about the bad fire years of 2014, what that brought up for me was the Oregon Gulch Fire, which took place in Jackson and Klamath counties, and would have burned all the way to Klamath had it not been for some unseasonal rain that we experienced while the fire was burning. The place where that fire took off was in industrial forest lands that have been turned over from owner to owner and not been cared for. It was gigantic slash piles that had been abandoned and left there. It was plantation lands that have been untended over time. And I'd be really curious from the point of view of the Forest Industries Council, how you are working with your members to make sure that when forest land is turned over, that actually people go back and take care of the problems that they have left so that we don't have complete devastating fires in the future.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Marsh, I'm happy to follow up with you on that. I think I expressed earlier it's tremendously costly to have a fire on any landowner, whether large or small, whether you're converting between ownerships, and that's the last thing that anyone wants to have happen. So we'll follow up with that and get to the bottom of that experience from your perspective.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that would be useful. Other questions for this panel?
Right here.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. For either of you, I guess, you know, what's the percentage of forest land in Oregon that's privately held and what percentage is publicly owned? Do we put this into perspective?
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the state of Oregon, of all of its forest land, 60% of that is federally owned. And then the private landowners, the large industrial, own about 20% of the total private lands, and the non-industrial own about 12%. 14, right? They harvest 12%. Yeah.
And the state and counties own about 4.
State's about 4% of forest. Yeah.
State and counties together.
Right.
So another missing element in this conversation in front of this committee is the U.S. Forest Service, right? Because
sure.
The Department of Forestry protects private lands, state lands, and BLM lands. And so that's a giant missing element in this room.
Mm-hmm. Which makes this graph even more illustrative, I think, when you look at the costs that are being borne by the private landowners in terms of the contribution versus the public. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That raises several questions for me. And I'd like to go back to the chart that you have up. And maybe it's because I simply don't understand what lands we're talking about. And this is a great segue from what we just discussed. Here you're talking about BLM lands and private lands. I think that's what you're referring to in this chart. I'm generally familiar with the Oregon and California Railroad lands, which I think is what we're discussing.
That's great.
But, of course, most of the lands, forest lands in the state, are not in that checkerboard that we're talking about. Does this apply just to that checkerboard?
It applies to the BLM lands that are under contract to the Department of Forestry, which it includes everything on the west side plus that little bit in Klamath County. All the east side lands are not part of this.
The BLM manages those separately.
And that's right, and not protected by, they protect their own over there on the east side.
I understand. Okay.
Mr. Chair, to that
yes,
point,
please.
The private land reference here is also just the west side private land in the same area,
mm-hmm.
and it also includes the state forests and the county lands.
That's right.
That are in the area where the
all of
BLM
Oregon.
Lands are. Or does it include, does it go beyond BLM lands? Because
just BLM, not national forest.
Not because a lot of the land is national forest land.
Correct. Right.
So we're only talking about the BLM land, and that land, unless I'm mistaken, is only the route of the Oregon and California Railroad. Is that right, or is it somewhere else too?
Mr. Chair, in addition to the ONC lands, there's other BLM lands scattered through western Oregon.
Okay.
That are protected by the Department of Forestry.
I got you. All right. And there's a bunch of alternative explanations why you could end up with these weird charts. weird in the sense that they the percentage of the land that burns seems to be very high on the federal, on the BLM side. One hypothesis you could make, whether it's true or not, I have no idea, is that the private landowners are doing a better job of managing their lands for fire readiness. I'm not sure what the correct language is. Than the BLM is. If the BLM, for example, doesn't do a good job of managing a brush and the density of trees and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you'd expect more crown fires and more brush fires in that area. Is that an explanation, or do you have a different explanation for why it is that the BLM lands seem to burn a lot faster than the private lands do?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think part of what you say is correct in that the fuels are built up. Another has to do with road access. You know, in the early days when these BLM lands were being protected, and I guess I mean, you know, more than 15 years or so ago, the BLM harvested a lot of timber. Part of what, you know, was talked about earlier, the lack of money coming from the ONC lands to the counties, that's produced this, all this, they come together. The harvesting isn't going on, so they're not maintaining the roads. The access isn't as good getting into some of those places. Harder to get at those fires to fight. And in some cases, they have large, inaccessible blocks like down on the Rogue River.
Okay. And so if there's a fire down there, it's very hard to get to it.
That's right.
I got you. Thank you. And so I think what this chart suggests is that the federal government ought to be putting more money into fire suppression and probably into maintaining their forest land. Is that an assertion that you would make, or have I misunderstood this chart?
No, I would agree with that, and I also think that they need to be responsible for more of the extra costs that come from fighting those fires.
All right.
But the private lands right now are basically subsidizing the firefighting on the BLM lands, in my view. And in addition to that, that once all of the emergency fire fund money is spent and it comes onto the general fund, then the taxpayers of Oregon are also subsidizing those federal fires. That's my personal opinion.
So in addition to not getting any property taxes, we're also paying to help fight fires on federal lands. Then I want to switch to a slightly different topic. As you pointed out, National Forest is the majority of the forest land in Oregon. How does that come into the funding of forest fire fighting, if at all? Does the federal government through the National Forest System provide support funds or firefighting? And if so, how does that fit into all this?
So, Chair Barnhart, you are hitting on all the hot issues just sitting there. Mm-hmm.
Well, you raised them. I'm just asking for clarification.
That chart is provocative. This whole conversation is provocative. The U.S. Forest Service does indeed have a budget, and when fires happen all across the country, you know, they dispatch firefighting apparatus, and there's a long, complicated dance between a Department of Forestry and the U.S. Forest Service and who's going to run a fire and what chance it has of moving on to private lands and how they coordinate all of that and who pays what. And again, I would just implore you to talk to the experts in the room. They really have a lot of experience going around this. But it's a sensitive conversation. So is this BLM conference. This is the first time we've ever had compiled data like this to look at actual fires over this kind of a period of time, and there are some hard conversations to have in the next couple of years as ODF negotiates their contract with BLM, and so there you have it.
And I assume that
before you leave that, it's important to recognize that chart you're looking at there, that only represents the large fire costs. Mm-hmm. So the BLM in the contract with Department of Forestry, and again, Department of Forestry people can answer this better than me. Hopefully you'll give them a chance, but I'll just lay the groundwork in that the BLM is paying a per acreage charge just like private landowners are for the base cost of fire. And these costs that are represented in this chart are for those fires that get beyond the base level of protection and get into the emergency fire fund and then ultimately into the general fund.
Okay, thank you. I'm assuming that all these issues have been raised with our congressional delegation as they consider the budgets. I'm getting head nods from the back of the room.
Good, because hopefully that has occurred at levels.
Well, I would suggest that these are things that people directly interested, like landowners, in these issues ought to be, you know, screaming their heads off with our senators and congressmen.
So, in all seriousness, I think you can appreciate how important relationships are in this. I mean, especially in the checkerboard with shared boundaries, property line boundaries. And so, the last thing we want to do is offend a partner. But this is real hard data, and so the BLM is starting to absorb it and understand what that means. It just came out in February, mm-hmm. and so it's the platform from which the Department of Forestry is going to engage BLM in a conversation as they negotiate their 2018 contract, and I suspect that there will be conversations at the congressional level as well, because BLM, you know, they receive funds from different entities as well. But it's an important conversation.
And of course, they can't put resources in that they don't have.
Right.
That was the point I was trying to make, and it may or may not be the appropriate point.
Right.
I don't know.
We don't want to be in a position, though, of yelling and screaming and offending a partner.
Right.
So we're all trying to carefully manage through this dance.
That makes perfectly good sense to me. But, of course, they can't spend money that Congress doesn't give them as well. Thank you. Any other questions that's generated? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, just
yes.
A question.
Yes, please.
I noticed you opened concurrently both hearings on both bills.
Yes,
would you
sir.
Like our testimony on 2270?
Yes, if you have testimony on that bill, I was expecting we were going to get it
sure.
At the same time.
Go ahead.
But
all
if
right.
You have additional things you want to say on one of the bills that you haven't mentioned, please do.
Okay. Well, again, for the record, Christina McNitt with OFIC. Just to make it quick, House Bill 2270 is the perennial harvest tax bill that you see every session, because the mechanism for Department of Forestry, unlike other agency fee bills, is a tax bill. So the current forest products harvest tax rate is $3.745 per 1,000 board feet, supporting five programs: the Oregon Forest Resources Institute, fire protection, which we just talked about, the Department of Forestry, Forest Practices Act Administration, the College of Forestry for Forestry mm-hmm. Education, and the Forest Research Lab. I think I'm just going to cut to the chase and say that this is unique among the 14 resource agencies, in that the department doesn't utilize a fee bill, but this tax mechanism where landowners pay 40% of the administrative cost of the Oregon Forest Practices Act, and we also significantly pay into the Forest Research Lab and Forestry Education. We would support moving the bill without recommendation to Ways and Means, where you've heard the bill then is married up with the agency budget and with higher ed and move forward from there. Thank you for all your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roger Byer, representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association. We, too, support moving House Bill 2270 through this committee with blanks in the bill to the Ways and Means Committee so that it can match with the budget. Those rates can't be set until the level of budget is set for the Department of Forestry and for the OSU Extension and Forest Research Lab. So we traditionally support these programs. We believe in the mission of what these taxes are used for, but we don't want to put a rate into the bill until we know what that rate needs to be. So therefore, we would ask that you would move the bill forward without recommendation as to passage or without recommendation as to blanks in the bill, and let the Ways and Means Committee set the budget. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. We've got two categories, I think, of people to testify that are signed up. And I think I'd like to hear from the department first. And perhaps the testimony suggests some different people from the department, but I'll let you guys decide that. And then after that, we'll hear from the college. Okay, just one. All right. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. I am Kyle Abraham, Private Forest Deputy Division Chief for the Oregon Department of Forestry. The Department of Forestry appreciates the opportunity to provide testimony in support of House Bill 2270.
What is this?
House Bill 2270 amends ORS 321.015 to establish the forest products harvest tax rates for calendar years 2018 and 2019. These taxes support the Oregon State University Forest Research Laboratory, OSU Professional Forestry Education, and the Oregon Department of Forestry's administration of the Oregon Forest Practices Act. The Forest Practices Act is vital in assuring the public that private lands are managed with resource protections and that a stable regulatory environment exists for forest businesses. Enacted in 1971 and modified over 30 times since, it regulates timber harvest, road construction, and maintenance, treatment of slash, chemical use, and other practices on private lands. The Act requires reforestation and scientifically supported best practices for all aspects of forestry, including stream protection, road construction, pesticide application, sensitive wildlife sites, and other resources. The Act encourages investments in private forest lands by providing a consistent regulatory environment and constitutes a social contract with the public, providing insurance that private forests are managed responsibly. The success of the private forest program depends on shared responsibility and partnerships among stakeholders, forest land owner operators, and other state agencies and the department. The program gains compliance with the Forest Practices Act by maintaining an effective balance of science-based rules, incentives, technical assistance, and uniform enforcement. For the Department of Forestry, this bill maintains the concept of shared responsibility between the general public, forest landowners for resource protection and public benefits provided by the Forest Practices Act. This shared responsibility is reflected in the joint funding of the program by public funds and harvest tax revenue. The tax rates established by the bill are set on a per thousand board feet harvested basis. For comparison, a loaded log truck on average carries about 3,000 board feet. The rates are calculated considering current biennium ending balance, projected budget requirements for the next biennium, and forecasted harvest levels for the next 2 years. As shown in Attachment 1, Oregon harvest levels declined during the 90s due to reduction in harvest from federal lands. Attachment 2 shows resulting rate increases as budget needs were spread across lower harvest volumes. Since 1999, the harvest level generally has stabilized at approximately 4 billion board feet per year, and tax rates have stabilized as well. We are currently anticipating annual harvest for the next 2 years to hold steady at approximately 3.9 billion board feet. The Oregon Department of Revenue collects the harvest tax and transfers the receipts to the Department of Forestry on a quarterly basis. At this time, we still have one of eight revenue transfers remaining in the current biennium. This transfer will occur in early May of this year. Because the new rates in House Bill 2270 for the next two-year period are based in part on the ending balance in this biennium, we would suggest that rates not yet be inserted into the bill. In addition to the current biennium, actual revenue consideration, the harvest tax, is directly linked with the department's next biennial budget. Therefore, the rate calculations must remain fluid until the agency's budget is at or near completion. This link necessitates a concurrent consideration of House Bill 2270 and the agency's budget bill, Senate Bill 5519, in the Joint Ways and Means Committee during the final legislative budget process. In summary, the Department of Forestry supports House Bill 2270 and welcomes the opportunity to work with the Legislative Assembly as the revenue and budget processes move forward. Thank you for your time and consideration. I'd be pleased to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Abram, please.
Quick question.
Representative Nose, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Abram, does the Ways and Means Committee act like the Revenue Committee and debate how much money we should be putting into fire suppression when they're down there looking at this? Because I think that's the concern of the representative that brought the bill. He's worried we're not spending enough in that area. I get the people that were up were worried about how we would distribute that financial burden. That's a legitimate question, but his larger question is also about, are we spending enough on, do we have enough in there for to deal with fires?
Oh, you flushed them out. I was hoping they might come.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. I am Peter Doherty, and I serve as the Oregon State Forester and the Director of the Department of Forestry. And so whether we came up or not has a lot to do about which of the two bills we're testifying on. To be clear, the department supports House Bill 2270 and has no position on House Bill 2470. 66. But I always appreciate the opportunity to talk about the fire program. We're really proud of it. It's our number one priority in our agency. It's why the agency was started. I'm really proud. We've been doing a great job over the 105 years of existence of our complete and coordinated system. Speaking of the complete and coordinated system, the front sheet's got the budget, which you've all been asking about, and we can come back and do more detailed analysis. But I'd like you to take a look on the back at the number of partners. When we talk about the complete and coordinated system, we usually end with this slide. I just wanted to start with it because you just heard about the BLM study. The BLM study is part of our complete and coordinated system, and they were collaboratives on that study. So it wasn't like that's our study, that's our complete and coordinated system study. So with that, I'd also like to take the legislature. You've heard about the 2013-2015 fire seasons. It'll go down as the worst three fire seasons in the history of the Oregon Department of Forestry, at least up until now. I really want to thank the legislature for the support they gave the department. It doesn't sound like a lot, but it really does help our folks to know that you have our backs when we're out there in the midst of fighting fire and that you respect the job we do. And so I just really wanted to extend thanks for that. One last thing before I answer Representative Noss's question is I would like to recognize and thank the thousands of firefighters, forest landowners, forest operators, firefighting contractors, and agency contractors who are gearing up right now to prepare for the 2017 fire season. So this is a continuous process. During the off season, the short winters we have now, we do policy work and review our programs. We had both a fire program review and a Secretary of State audit, performance audit, looking at our programs. And so we're continuously approving. But right now we're focused on making sure we're going to be prepared and ready to provide the kind of support that you've come to expect from the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. In terms of the Ways and Means, our full budget goes through a Ways and Means process. And so all aspects of the Department of Forestry Fire Protection's budget is explained and examined and discussed how we do the complete and coordinated system. In a sense, that budget is built up from the ground level, and it's based on a Board of Forestry approved adequate level of protection. We have made changes and improvements over time, and the Wildfire Protection Act was mentioned, and that was a long-term review that led to our increase in our severity resources, which is we use to pay for our unique fire insurance and to pre-position aircraft around the state so that we're ready and can do aggressive initial attack. Those resources really paid off during the 2013-2015 fire seasons. It's tough to measure what you don't let burn, but in 2016, getting out of the drought period we've been in. We're seeing that relieve a little bit, and we were able to hit our target of 90% of all fires at 10 acres or less, which is our goal, is to catch them when they're small to keep the cost down. So, yes, our budget, all aspects of it are reviewed in Ways and Means.
And you think you have enough?
We have an adequate level of protection.
President Polvey doesn't think you do, right? That's the question, right?
Yeah, and then so we design our base fire program to be an adequate level of protection based on, the past history of fires, just that whole our learning experience of what it takes to put out fires. We adjust in the longer term through more thoughtful full program reviews, and we've done two of them over the past 10 years, one leading to the Wildfire Protection Act, which increased our severity resources, helped create the funding structure that you have before you. You've just completed another one. There are recommendations for us to evaluate large fire funding, also to evaluate the sustainability of our wildfire protection staff. Are we able to retain and be able to staff three incident management teams that we do? And the third thing are specific policy questions to look at it. Can we become more proactive in the future in reducing the fire risk? And we've taken on one of those studies you've heard about, the BLM fire contract. We'll be looking at that transfer of risk as another study, which is, are we seeing a transfer of risk from one owner to another? And then a third policy question that we're working on with the Environmental Quality Commission is around smoke management and the barrier it represents to doing more prescribed fire or doing prescribed burns on slash piles and things like that to lower the risk of fire on the landscape. So,
thank you. Let's start with Representative Marsh and then Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. I must say, in my rural neighborhood, our ODF outpost, fire outpost that we have in the summer is revered by everybody who lives there, and whoever gets stationed there immediately becomes part of the community. So we thank you for that. I wondered if you wanted to comment on Representative Holvey's suggestion that tight funding times might mean that we should reduce support to the OFRI.
Oregon Forest Resources Institute's a partner with us on forestry education for particularly for small landowner community. So it provides a number of functions. That's a policy question, and I think you would want to have a policy, you know, somebody bring forward a proposal and have a thoughtful policy discussion. If I seem surprised, it's because it's a little bit out of the blue to talk about a major change in the policy structure of how we are doing forestry education without having a thoughtful process that includes all the stakeholders. I'm much more used to if there's an idea or a question, we have an open, public, transparent process, including all stakeholders, to develop ideas and options about how that should be funded.
Yes, please.
To be clear, this is a transparent process. We're just raising the question. He raised it. I'm asking you for your comments. So,
And it is in the bill.
Right.
Correct.
Yes, and therefore it's open for conversation.
Yeah, and so I don't believe OFRI is here to talk about the work that they do. And while they're a partner with us, as I mentioned, on our forestry education partnership, I can't speak adequately to all the work they do. We do appoint their board, so there is a little bit of oversight. They're run by a board of directors, so I think that question is best answered by OFRI.
Fair enough.
Thank you. Representative Smith-Warner, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for being here. I'm just going to ask a couple quick questions about the submitted testimony from your department, which you're CC'd on, but I know it's not your testimony. So quick comment, I'm struck on the in the graphic about given the other fluctuations, how consistent the red line, which is the private land harvest, has been. That's just, I was struck by that looking at those numbers. And then I have a more specific question about the next page, the division in each of the years about who gets what from that tax, which is largely, and maybe I apologize if I missed this, who decides how much goes to each of those categories? Is that in statute, or does that get determined every year by the board?
So I'll go ahead and answer this. I used to be the private forest division chief, so I have some experience, and then I can speak. The 63 cents that goes to the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund is in this bill, but it's regulated under ORS 477, and that sets it where that fund where those funds go to and what they're used for, and when and the caps on those funds. So there's a separate statute for that. The Forest Research Lab and the undergraduate education is set as part of the OSU budget. And so those are fluid in this time. The OFRI was set when it was put, when they were first added to the statute, it was set at a fixed rate of 75 cents, and that it is adjusted by their board of directors subject to restrictions on how much it could be raised in a given year. I think I got all of those. And then the Forest Practice Act, you've heard, is set in conjunction with the our budget and the projected harvest tax or harvest.
And it's that last piece that, that we're involved in.
Yeah.
The rate involving the tax.
And real briefly, it's not surprising on the private forest land harvest being so regular. They're sustainably managed forest, and they represent about 36% of the lands, and they produce about 75% of the timber harvest in the state of Oregon. They've been producing that amount for over 40 years. That's what sustainable forestry can produce.
It does.
All right. Other questions? Yes, please.
Can we just go through this?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Let's do. Well, let me cut to the chase a little bit. I think you start at the bottom and work up, don't you, in the way this thing works? You hit us, give us the top line only, please, because we have two other witnesses, and I'd like to do a little bit of other business today if we can.
Absolutely. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Graff, and I serve as Chief of Fire Protection for the Department of Forestry, and my name was mentioned several times. So to bring some clarity to fire funding, wildfire funding for the state of Oregon, this is the framework in which we operate, and I really appreciate the committee taking some time to chew through this. Starting at the bottom, we do establish the base level of fire protection. This is what we refer to as the fire department. These are the engines, about 250 fire engines ready, available for wildfire response, about 500 seasonal firefighters, about 12 helicopters, water tenders, and this is the fire ready to respond to wildfires when they ignite. We average about 1,000 wildfires across the state of Oregon. Is our 10-year average. We burn about 30,000 acres is our 10-year average. It was recognized in 2002 in the legislature, and landowners' investment in severity program was important to have fast mobilized equipment statewide, specifically additional aviation assets that we can get ahead of lightning storms and peak dry conditions throughout the fire season, and we mobilize these resources in advance of those conditions. That's called the severity program. The blue components, as I walk up, the color-coded means something. This is, means it's the shared responsibility with forest landowners. As many elaborated earlier, is unique among the western states to this degree within Oregon. As you move above the severity program, you'll see what's included: a $20 million shared between the general fund and the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, which is a unique fund of landowner dollars that contribute to the large fire components. And the reference earlier was the ski slope. That's where the landowner dollars have contributed to large fire costs in the state of Oregon for many years. Above the $20 million is a $30 million that's determined by the state of Oregon. Those combined make, for clarity, there was one distinction today, a $50 million deductible for the insurance policy, not a $50 million policy. But there's a $50 million deductible in which we have to gain access to our $25 million policy. And if you study the policy, it was established in 1973. We've paid $64 million in premiums, and we received $102 million in payouts over that time. So it's been a very favorable policy. And it's changed dramatically over time, the premiums, the deductible, and the coverage.
So the names turned out not to have made a good bet.
We were curious in that discussion after the 13 and 14 fire seasons where we experienced full policy claims, $25 million, so $50 million in two years, consecutive years, if that policy would be available to us for the future. One of the key and critical reasons why it was available to us is the long-term partnership and the recognition of Oregon's complete and coordinated system, which at its foundation recognizes that a state agency serves the citizens with fire protection. The landowners engage fully in that process, not only at the base level of fire protection with the 50-50 match for cost for base level protection, not only at the severity level, but at the large fire funding, that there's skin in the game, if you will. Mm-hmm. We have a long-term relationship, and we've adjusted accordingly to make that relationship sustain over time. And the adjustment was going from a $20 million deductible after the 13-14 fire seasons to a $50 million deductible. That negotiation happens every year. Since the 15 fire season, we've seen two doublings of the premium, but it has not been at the highest it's been in history. We had challenging years in 87 and 86, and we had challenging years in 2001 and 2002. And from all those challenging years, there's always been leadership at the legislature to embrace how we manage large fire, how we manage and prepare and be ready for fire conditions across the landscape. And that begins with the relationship that we have for the complete and coordinated system that the state forester recognized. An excellent system.
Representative Bueller?
Just one clarification. So of the deductible, who pays the first dollar here?
So the deductible and that relationship has changed over time. If you look at our history, currently from the Wildfire Protection Act, was established that there's a 50-50 dollar per dollar payment between the general fund and the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund up to that $20 million.
And after that, the state pays.
Then the state determines.
Right. So you combine those two numbers together and you get that $50 million deductible.
Correct.
Thank you.
The premium, and the reason it's color-coded in blue, the premium for that insurance policy, by law with the Wildfire Protection Act, the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund pays up to 50% of that premium. And we've seen the premium drop in two consecutive years because we haven't accessed that policy. $300,000 the first year, $150,000 this year.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. We very much appreciate your testimony today.
Yeah, thank you very much for the time you've given us today.
Thank you. Tyler Alexander and Jeff, I think it's Huntington, but I'm not certain. I don't think we may have an introduction to the
There's tax policy in this kind.
Yes. I mean, it's good to know. Gentlemen, please.
All right. Well, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Tyler Alexander, and I represent the Oregon Farm Bureau.
Ah, that's what squiggle stands for. Okay, Oregon Farm Bureau. Yes,
right.
Sir.
And by way of background, we are the state's largest general agricultural organization, representing about 7,000 members engaged in farming, ranching, and also small woodland owners. I'd like to say that OFB appreciates the opportunity to testify in opposition to HB 2466 today. Just keep it short by echoing a lot of the concerns and information provided by the other landowner groups. For many of our members, the cost in funding fire suppressions are already too high. We have strong policy on the matter that at least 50% of the cost should be borne by public entities. And we've seen in recent years the landowner contributions have been as high as about 70%. So additional tax would obviously increase the inequity. With that, I'd like to turn it over and thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you very much. Let's hear from the college. Yes, sir. Thank you for waiting.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Jeff Huntington. I'm here on behalf of Dean Thomas Mattis, who's under the weather today and couldn't make it to Salem. I'm here to speak exclusively to 2270 and express our support for it. And I will let my written testimony stand, but I just want to make a couple, three quick points. First, the base budget of our college relies on three primary funding sources in rough proportion, roughly equal shares. We've got general fund educational dollars that flow through the university system, statewide public service funds that are part of an appropriation to ag experiment stations, extension programs, and the Forest Research Lab, and then the harvest tax that is the subject of the bill. All of our programs stand on that three-legged stool of those three funding sources. Those programs, for those of you that aren't familiar with our college, they cover everything from tree genetics and forest soils and water quality to mm-hmm. innovative wood products for wood building applications, and all of our faculty are funded across the board by those three sources of funding. We use HarvestX dollars to match for research grants, and generally accomplish that at least a 2-to-1 ratio from external research and testing contracts and grants to the money that's invested in the harvest tax. And that leverage really helps drive the research programs that give our college the reputation around the world that it has. And I guess my last and very most important point of the day, Dean Mattis this morning asked me to be really clear in my time with you today to express his appreciation not only to the committee for taking time to do this, but also to the Oregon Forest Products industry for their commitment in investing in higher education and in our programs. When he speaks with deans at other programs around the country, it is really clear how absolutely unique and extraordinary this funding structure that we have that supports our forestry program is. And the harvest tax funds are a key ingredient for why we're known around the world as one of the best colleges of forestry. And so we appreciate your time and that of the timber industry and the landowners for supporting us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? I appreciate the fact that the universities in Oregon, I used to say university system, there isn't any anymore, but the universities in Oregon are woefully underfunded. And while you have a unique funding stream, we need to figure out how to fund the rest of the place as well. And I'm very pleased that this particular college has a stream of revenue. I'm assuming that you also get revenue from the other regular university sources for teaching and research.
Chair Barnhart, that's absolutely correct. About a third of our funding for our college comes through the regular education general fund that goes into the university and then comes to our college, and then the statewide public service monies and then the harvest tax through the collaboration to setting the rates that you've been discussing today.
And tuition, one assumes.
Tuition is part of that university.
Part of the university funding. Great. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much. And,
thanks.
And with that, we will close the public hearings on House Bill 2270 and House Bill 2466. Colleagues, given the hour, we're not going to get to our work sessions today. I'm going to hold all of them over until Monday. There are some issues on a couple of them that we'll probably want to discuss. Please review the amendment. I think it's the -2 on the property tax measure, 2859, I think, so that we can have a good conversation about that on Monday. And with that, we're going to carry over the work session on HJR 9, House Bill 2859, House Bill 3180, House Bill 2274, and House Bill 2400. Thank you, colleagues. And with that, have a great weekend, and the committee's adjourned.
We're subsidizing the wars.